Welcome to Enclave on Air. I'm your host today, Courtney Flaherty. Enclave on Air is a podcast from Enclave, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both the digital and print formats, Enclave covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, Christopher Liu, MD, reviewed current treatment strategies and factors informing sequencing decisions for patients with metastatic colorectal cancer in the third-line setting. Liu is co-director of the Gastrointestinal Medical Oncology Program, associate director for clinical research, and a professor of medicine in the Department of Medical Oncology at the University of Colorado Cancer Center in Aurora. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Liu explained how treatment priorities are recalibrated to account for changing goals of care when a patient with mCRC reaches the third-line setting, emphasized the importance of molecular retesting in this setting to identify new actionable mutations, and discussed how efforts to shift effective therapies earlier in the treatment course could reduce the need for third-line options in the future.
When you're seeing a patient with metastatic colorectal cancer who has reached that third line setting, how do you tend to recalibrate treatment priorities at that point? And how does your definition of what success looks like differ from earlier lines?
So whenever we have a patient that has reached the third line setting for treatment with metastatic colorectal cancer, a lot of times the goals of the treatment may be a little bit different. I think in the initial treatment of any patient with metastatic colorectal cancer, we really want to prioritize responses and obviously the duration of that response as well. There are some patients with untreated metastatic colorectal cancer that can actually go on to receive surgical treatment or some type of ablative therapy with the hopes of eradicating even metastatic disease. By the time a patient has actually gone through frontline and second line treatment for metastatic colorectal cancer, by the time we get to third line, the priority for our patients a lot of times becomes stabilizing the disease as opposed to getting these dramatic responses, which we know are sometimes rare in the refractory setting. So this requires a lot of goals of care conversations with our patients. What is it that they're trying to achieve? How are they feeling? What is their performance status? If we have a patient with refractory metastatic colorectal cancer that feels well, we want a treatment that can at least stabilize that disease so they aren't having more symptoms from their cancer, while also hopefully preserving their quality of life.
What factors carry the most weight as you tend to map out that third line strategy?
So whenever we map out the third line strategy for a patient with refractory metastatic colorectal cancer, obviously the biggest focus is how is our patient doing? What is their performance status? What are some of the toxicities that they've received from their prior therapies? What are they dealing with now? And obviously, what are their goals moving on into the future? We also want to take a good look at their biomarkers, their molecular information, and just make sure that we haven't missed an opportunity to treat with a targeted therapy that is FDA approved. So in a patient that is HER2 amplified, have they received tucatinib and trastuzumab or trastuzumab deruxtecan? Those are some just examples of targeted therapies where we want to make sure, even though a lot of times we start our patients off with chemotherapy, have they had the opportunity to respond to a biomarker-directed therapy? But in the third line setting, we certainly have several options now. Those options are typically TAS-102 in combination with bevacizumab or fruquintinib or regorafenib. And when we think about what selection we want to use in the third line setting, we may go by the patient's prior toxicity. So if they have a lot of bone marrow issues from prior chemotherapy, adding on another chemotherapy at that time may not be the right thing to do because the patient may have a lot of cytopenias. Conversely, if the patient is dealing with a lot of cardiovascular issues like hypertension, we may not want to give a drug like fruquintinib, for instance, that has hypertension as a side effect and may want to steer towards using another agent that doesn't have those same side effects.
Diving into molecular features a little bit more, how do they, in addition to primary tumor location, influence your later line choices? And in what situations do you find value in retesting or using liquid biopsy?
So I think we're seeing a trend in the treatment of metastatic colorectal cancer of using these molecularly directed therapies in earlier lines of treatment, sometimes with chemotherapy. A great example of this is the BRAF V600E story. So we have known for years that overall survival is improved when we use encorafenib in combination with an anti-EGFR inhibitor. in the refractory setting, in a second line setting and beyond. But of course, with the Breakwater study, which looked at the combination of chemotherapy, now we have data on FOLFOX and FOLFIRI in combination with encorafenib and cetuximab, that the overall survival response rates and progression-free survival are both significantly improved whenever we use these targeted therapies earlier upfront, and obviously for BRAF in the frontline setting with chemotherapy, that our patients really get the benefit from that. I think it's really important that we test for biomarkers early so that we initiate the right treatment at the right time. There are also other biomarkers that now have FDA-approved therapies like HER2 and KRAS G12C. But in the third line setting, I do think that sometimes retesting for these biomarkers can be important. If we get a liquid biopsy or ctDNA, we can sometimes see if there are resistance mutations present. We can see if there are new actionable alterations. In patients that are KRAS, NRAS, and BRAF wild type, and they receive anti-EGFR therapy in the past, we know that if we check ctDNA and there's the absence of resistance mutations, that they may have a chance to respond to a rechallenge. Well, unfortunately, a lot of our patients with third line or refractory metastatic colorectal cancer are not going to have an actionable biomarker. And this is the reason why treatment selection with TAS-102 and bevacizumab or fruquintinib or in some cases regorafenib can still be very useful options in the refractory setting and certainly require discussion with our patient to select the best treatment.
Now, some of these third-line options are supported by incremental benefits rather than dramatic gains. How do you assess those later-line trial data and decide what is most meaningful to apply for your patients?
So we know that in the third-line and beyond setting, that our patients' cancer biology at that point is very, very different than when they were originally diagnosed. And we've, at that point, essentially selected for the worst biology. And we know that the tumor, it is quite different at this point than when they were newly diagnosed. And so when we look at the third line data, we shouldn't be totally surprised that the response rates are fairly low. But what we're looking for is that really that improvement in progression-free survival and overall survival. And we certainly want it to be more than just a couple of weeks. And when you look at some of the phase three studies that have been done in this space, there are some meaningful improvements in overall survival, showing that even if we can at least stabilize the disease, that we can see an overall survival benefit that can be meaningful to our patients. And, you know, a lot of times those hazard ratios, we're kind of, you know, looking in that kind of 0.6, 0.7 type range to say that, okay, well, there's a meaningful improvement there. And I do think that we see this in some of the phase three studies that have been done. And I think that these are really critical data to apply to our patients because, you know, we don't know how any of our patients are going to respond to the third line agents, but we just want there to be the opportunity for hope that when we provide these drugs to our patients, that they're going to have a meaningful improvement in progression-free survival and overall survival. And that's really what our patients are asking for.
Now, getting to safety, by the time patients reach the third line setting, treatment-related toxicities have accumulated. So how do you factor tolerability, symptom burden, and quality of life into that shared decision-making?
So whenever we look at the patient and how they're doing, that's really going to inform what we select for in the third line setting and beyond. So if a patient has had significant cytopenias from prior chemotherapy, we know that those will likely continue if we continue chemotherapy in, say, the third line setting. So for some of our patients, they may honestly just need a chemotherapy holiday just to allow their bone marrow to recover. Simultaneously, you have to also consider a patient's performance status. What are the toxicities that they've had from prior lines of therapy? And will our third line choices make those symptoms that already exist potentially worse? And of course, one of the biggest things that we have to decide as physicians and as caregivers is how our patients are doing before we start third line therapy. And so obviously, if their performance status is a 3 or 4, that's a situation where treatment honestly oftentimes really doesn't add anything meaningful to overall survival, but may certainly impact their quality of life. Simultaneously, we do now see a lot of patients that are in the refractory setting whose performance status may be 0 or 1, and they may be feeling really great. But a lot of times we just have to look at the patient, their existing toxicities and their symptoms, and look at the agents that we have on hand. And luckily, we have some options here. And they do have different side effect profiles. And I think that really putting together you know, the right drug with the right patient here is the key, particularly in the refractory setting.
As more targeted and biomarker-driven strategies move earlier into the treatment algorithm, how do you see the role and composition of third-line therapy changing over the next few years?
As the targeted therapies move into earlier lines of therapy, honestly, the biggest thing that we're hoping for is that our patients show us that benefit with longer overall survival. And that's obviously the goal of what we're trying to do with any treatment. But that certainly means that by the time we get to the third line, that many of our patients will have exhausted their biomarker-directed therapies. I think that in this situation, you may find patients that are, number one, hopefully just living longer with metastatic colorectal cancer. Number two, if our initial therapies are more effective, the hope is that actually more of our patients will have the opportunity to receive third-line therapy, and we'll see if the data kind of long-term bears that out. And obviously, I think the future is really exciting in colorectal cancer. I think that the options that we have now are good, but we obviously want them to be even better. And so really looking forward to the future, I think we're going to see more data regarding antibody-drug conjugates. I think we're going to see more immunotherapy data, even for patients with microsatellite stable colorectal cancer. And so I do think that the future is bright, but you know, certainly we'll have to see what the impact is of moving some of these more effective therapies earlier in lines of therapy. And then hopefully our patients will then be able to receive third and fourth line therapies in the future.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive on Air. Check back throughout the week for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On X and Blue Sky, follow us at OncLive. On Facebook, like us at OncLive, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive on Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms, so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive on Air.